I was first introduced to No Fit State Circus. 96, 96, 95? 95,
96.
96. Yeah.
For Alice.
That's right.
We picked you up from the train station and you had
you
accordions on your feet.
Yeah, I had this strained audition, I remember. And you picked me up in a pink car.
Didn't you meet on a train?
No.
Randomly?
Not at all. I saw an advert at Circus Space, or someone said at Circus Space, they're looking for a musician. So I rang up Tim, I think I spoke to, and I think the next person I met was you in the little pink Fiat. And I just sat down next to you.
I think you should call me Annie for purposes of the interview so that people know who
yeah.
you're talking about.
I sat next to Ali in this little pink Fiat and got driven to Tom's building site of a house, well, the first of many, and there was a kind of drawing room between the kitchen and the hall, and that's where I was with this huge accordion. Like a massive Italian scandali accordion. And I remember thinking, I think on the way I was just thinking, what could I do with accordions that's fun? And then I had this idea that I could put them, use them, find a couple of little ones and just stick them on my feet and walk around and go, And I think I interrupted the audition and just said, I don't really know why I'm doing this. I know I can play.
I think we said, we know you can play, Peter, but what are you like in the back of a lorry? Because the last musician was such a wimp. We don't want another one like that.
Yeah.
We didn't really care about the music at that point, I think.
No,
we were more worried that you could put the tent up and down with the rest of us.
Yeah, that was it. Tom kept asking funny questions about whether I liked to carry things and whether I could, you know, whether I was... He was trying to get out of me if I was a hard worker and... Yeah, really, whether I was a whinger or not a whinger. When I look back on that first audition, it felt like everyone was sitting there kind of holding back a laugh because they couldn't really take either me or themselves seriously. And then I went back to London. I think I went to see my gran. And then somebody rang. I think it was Tim who rang and said, yeah, in his Tim fashion, you got the job. And there was a moment at my grandmother's when I thought, what if they don't give me the job? And I hadn't even crossed my mind that you wouldn't give me the job. And it was just, there was a moment when I thought, maybe they won't give it to me. No, that can't happen. And then they did.
And so that was for which tour, and how did that tour begin for you?
That was Alice. And it began with me arriving and saying, I've got another job and I might have to leave early or something. And nobody liked that. So then I managed to swap things around a bit so I could stay. Oh, I had the, they said, you need to make a choice or something. And I had, there was Mark Moreau was there, and then there was the Yorkshire contingency.
Tim and Sarah.
That's right. But it worked out. It was actually possible to do both, because then I went to Finland straight after that.
And you've got quite a big family, and how did they get to arrive?
I think the first one was Winston. We were outside, we were near Heathrow. What's that place called?
Hounslow.
And I did a show and then went zooming off to the airport, went to Sweden, picked up Winston and brought him back and arrived at the next stand. And he was 3 and he was very, very worried about absolutely everything. So I sat him on a chair next to me for the show and said, you sit on that chair, that's where you sit. And the first show where I had to be this caterpillar, I have to go out onto the stage. And he follows me. Suddenly he's there. And I'm going, go back, go back. And I think his kind of fearsome sort of stuck-to-me-ness lasted until Charlie turned up, and then they became a pair, and that was the last I saw of Winston for the rest of the tour.
What do you think? What do you remember about Alison? About the story and the people?
It was colourful. There was a lot of black and white squares, hats. Everyone was trying. I mean, the input was everyone was doing everything. There were kind of issues, like there's always going to be issues of like power issues, and I was very new to the game, so I just kind of watched people trying to manage people who didn't like being managed, which was everything from, you know, turning up on time and pulling one's weight. But once everyone had kind of settled down, everyone was actually really capable. Oh, I remember I'd gone off to Harrogate to pick up a really disgusting lorry, and then had had to fix that while rehearsing in this field outside. What's that place called now?
Bridgend.
So there were evenings of repair, lunchtime repair, evening repair.
And so what was your role in Alice, and what can you remember about what you created for the show?
Make music.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd already had about 8 years of music, circus music. So that was in 98, 99. So I'd already set up this 12-man band called Circus Bizarre Orchestras, and it was called Circus because I wanted the circus feel without the circus. And so I'd been playing music which somehow was like performative music for a long, long time. So working for the circus was suddenly an opportunity to try out this whole musical idea and put it into practice. Which I think worked. It kind of grew and developed, and it was about making the music and the physicality work together, not just an accompaniment. And I think from 96 until about 2000 and probably 2010, that was the case, or like 2000 until the last show I did with No Fit. I think when I left, the first show that I saw with Gareth managing it, I think there was still enough of it, of the shade or shadow of that period, of that journey, to influence how the music was shaped. So it read well. I think that after that, I think it's just become music, accompanying music, could be anything. I don't think it does the job. That's my opinion. You know.
Okay.
I think it lost. I think it was. You know, it's an almost 20-year. You know, it's almost 18 years of developing a language, and unless there's a conscious willingness to sustain that. There are hundreds of musicians who are really, really capable and can produce music, but how do you produce music for a physical show? And that's not just a question of musicians, it's also a question of how the performers are. How do performers use music? And what's really interesting is that there's a whole new, let's say, gang of circus performers who are much more in tune or much more conscious of the role of music than, say, you know, 15 years ago, music was just music. And I kept going, no, music is not just music, it's something else.
So out of all the shows that you've worked on a lot, is there a particular show where you think that was my pinnacle musically?
No.
Which show do you prefer? What's a preference?
I think each show had its own definition, and each show had its own, let's say, every show has something which is really enjoyable, because they were entities. You know, it'd be unfair to say Taboo was more fun than Alice, or Alice was more fun than Treasure Island, or Treasure Island was better than Immortal. It's not fair. It's each one was its own definition. So I wouldn't say that, and I wouldn't say there was a pinnacle, because it was a developmental journey, and the developmental journey just stopped. So it would have continued, but it didn't, which is a sadness. That's a bit of a sadness that it didn't. There, you know, it didn't happen. It maybe felt that you meet a new show, you meet a new topic, you meet a new director, or you meet a new cast, even more importantly. And the will of the cast is battling, especially in circus, with the will of the director, and the will of the director is battling with the will of the artistic, let's say, direction of the company, and that's battling. You know, there's battles, and or not battles in that sense, but there's necessary. It's all that dramatic tension, but although you need a director who leads, but you need your performers or what shape, what's possible. Always, it's always about the performer, and either you've got a director who understands that and really is in tune with that, or you've got a director who sees them just as puppets, and I'm going to make them do what I want. Both are absolutely viable ways forward. I think I prefer the first. I prefer where the relationship is, here's a director who is learning the company, and if the persona in the company completely changed from one show to another, they've got to relearn it. They can't just come with a template and say, oh, we're just going to swap people out and keep the same template. And that's the same. You'll get one tour where, as a group, a working group, we're fantastic. No one fights. Everyone's wonderful. It just is an amazing tour. And that has got nothing to do with the show. It's got to do with the people. Next year, some of the people are the same and you've got some other people in. And for some reason, nothing works. And you're going, why? Why is it not working? And they'll always, you know, it might be the tensions are slightly wrong, the astrological signs are different, you know, I don't know what it is. Something is not working. So there's a lot of energy spent on just trying to make the team work. If the team doesn't work, it doesn't matter how good your show is, you know, then you'll do the show, but you won't be happy because the team isn't happy. You can have a really fantastic team and a mediocre show, and it's an amazing tour. So it's not fair to say this show is better than that show, or this tour is better than that, because it's not about just the show, it's about a tour.
No, I was just asking you about your personal favourite, really, but if I was going to say, well, which city we went to, which city did you... Has got a special memory for you?
I think the first year at Edinburgh. What other cities? London, being there, was nice. I think all of the small places that we visited have a kind of almost collective. They become one kind of mishmash of almost microscopic events, but all together they create a feel, you know, a very special feel.
So as well as musical director, were you called upon to do other jobs specifically on tour?
Pack lorries, cook on occasions when something had happened, do somersaults, put tents down, sit in lorries that have broken down for hours, help... unimaginative mechanics come up with imaginative solutions of how to get a lorry to the show quickly.
That's right, because you got your HGV as well, didn't you? Did you have HGV as well? So you were a lorry driver.
Staying
tell
up
us all... about the worst journey, Peter.
The worst journey?
Yeah.
I can't remember. There was one that was like a 17-hour long journey But it was never the worst. It was just a nightmare. But, it, you know, even the nightmare is fun.
Which one was that? I know which one this one's going to be. It would be great if you talk about it.
I had Bella. Bella was with me. And it was what with, what's his name? The quiet man, Paddy. Paddy. So Paddy and I and Bella ended up with a lorry that had broken down. And we eventually had a 25-gallon diesel kind of plastic thing in the cab. And this was the imaginative one. This is where I said, yeah, but it's just got to do with gravity. So if we put the diesel in the cab and just put a tube down, it's going to work. And then we tried it out, and it did. And then we had to keep filling this thing up to keep the pressure up. You know, it wouldn't keep the pressure.
What had to hold in it? The petrol tank?
So you took a... No, so the pump, the diesel pump, wasn't working.
Uh-huh.
But you still... But if you put the gallon thing in a cab, which is above the engine, and you take a tube down through...
Instead of having to pump it up from the tank.
So we took this through the floor and into the diesel pump, and that supplied the engine with diesel. And it worked.
How long the journey?
It was miles. It was miles. It was, you know, that was a 17-hour journey.
So how about the one where you got pulled on the weighbridge?
Oh, is that when they check your credentials or something?
Well, they checked your weight. Can't you remember? We were leaving Aberystwyth and...
Yeah, there was one...
And
we got stuck.
And we set up in convoy and I was first and then you and then Lynn and I managed to get away.
Yeah,
but
and
you didn't.
We didn't. And then we got stuck there. And I can't even remember what the reason was, but there was some reason and we ended up just going, okay, well, let's just pull out the table and chairs and start living here. So we had tables and chairs, and there was actually nothing they could do about that. I said, well, you've put us here, and we're going to make ourselves comfortable, because it's not very comfortable, and you haven't supplied any chairs or tables, and so we're going to do it ourselves, and we'll fix this thing tomorrow. So they had to leave, and they all left, because they couldn't actually stay there.
And you had a big meal, and I think you just picked up some international volunteers, hadn't you? So this was their first
encounter with Circus on the Road.
Mm.
It was really nice. It was very, very civilized. And then whatever the problem was, we fixed the next day.
Mm.
And off we went. And I remember saying to these guys, I said, you're causing more trouble for yourselves than you are for us, because we're quite happy with this, you know, that's fine.